Hi, everyone. Welcome to Robin's Nest, episode 10 and the season finale. I am very excited to have had this wonderful time with all of you guys. This has been awesome. And we will be restarting Robin's Nest next year, sometime after the first of the year. Stay tuned on Instagram at robins_nest_pod to keep up with when we will be coming back. And my first guest next year will be my best friend, Jill Hammer. So that's super exciting. I also want to just take a moment to thank my staff. My editor is the one and only Carly Schoenman, and she has been phenomenal and if it wasn't for her and her editing skills, Robin's Nest would not be a thing. And of course, my beautiful daughter, Zoe, who is the PR manager. So all those fun Instagram posts you see are her doing. And I just want to thank both of them so much for all of their help throughout the whole season. And today we are wrapping up with a really special guest. I am so, so excited to be speaking with him. His name is Olu Paul. And I want to tell you a little bit about him. He was born in Lagos, Nigeria, and he came to the US in 1983 to study electrical engineering technology at Temple University. Hoot, hoot. We are all Temple Owls here. And he decided to stay after he graduated. He went back to Temple 2 years later to become a pharmacist. And most recently, Olu went back to school and graduated St. Joseph's University with his MBA. He has 3 children, Rachel, Rebecca, and Joshua, and a 5-year-old granddaughter, Reagan, but I happen to notice you call her Ray Ray on Facebook. Is that correct? Yes. He is currently working as a licensed pharmacist in Pennsylvania, but he's in the process of switching careers to become an entrepreneur, working in the insurance and financial services industry. And he currently lives in Yardley, Pennsylvania, my hometown. So welcome, Olu. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the pod today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yes. Olu and I have never met before, but my friend Jill introduced me to Olu because I was looking for a African-American man to talk a little bit about what it is like to be Black in America right now and what it's been like for him. And he graciously offered to share that with us. So can you tell us first about a little bit about what it was like growing up in Nigeria? We're all very interested to hear that.
Absolutely. And once again, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for agreeing.
To answer your question, growing up in Nigeria, it's, as you can imagine, it's a different world, not unlike life here. Where I grew up was replete with all the modern conveniences that we take for granted here. We had everything possibly imagined. And on top of that, I was blessed to be able to spend a lot of my summers in London, England, because my parents were able to do that. So I grew up as a product of many different influences, the traditional Nigerian influence, and then heavily influenced by the British culture. Life in Lagos was, as you can maybe guess from what I've said, was very similar here. We got up, we went to school, we did everything that kids normally do, but it was a little different that, you know, I had extended family. And when you talk about family, we're talking large numbers of people. Everybody was a member of the family. So you really had so many people that you could look up to, many people that had influence in your life. So it was a wonderful time growing up.
Why did you come here?
So that's a good question. Eventually, when you get to a certain educational level, your best bet to further your education is to go to other countries. You could always go to Europe. You could come to the States if you wanted to. And I chose to come to the States because my cousin was here. So, and he was at Temple and he was studying mechanical engineering at the time. So good Temple Owls. So it was a natural fit. So, and I really wanted to become an engineer. I wanted to make sure that I was able to pursue my dream of being able to, you know, study engineering. So that's why I decided to come here.
Wow. And how did people treat you when you came? Like, were you, was it a culture shock from Nigeria to here?
Not for me. Mainly because, like I said, part of my summers were spent in Europe, and also some, on a couple of occasions, we had the chance to travel to the States. So it wasn't so much a culture shock. And as far as how I was treated when I first got here, I guess because you're in a almost like a bubble when you're in college, there was, I didn't see any differences from the way I was treated when I was growing up. It was a very pristine environment. I was free to learn and I was free to grow. I met so many different people, made so many lifelong friends while I was at school. So I didn't see any differences there.
That is so interesting to me because, you know, both of my daughters go to Temple and I loved Temple. I went there for both my undergraduate and my graduate degree. So what you're saying does not surprise me at all because you were at Temple, right? Exactly. Temple was, is, I found it to be a melting pot of all people coming from all over the world. And it was completely an accepting environment, a very warm environment, both from the perspective of the students and also the teachers.
Absolutely.
That's my experience. That's why I wanted my kids to go there.
Well, I actually had one professor in the School of Engineering that was actually a dyed-in-the-wool German. Although he talked very much about it, he probably went through the Second World War, as a result of that, I was able to gain another perspective. So that just goes to support what you just said, in that it was a melting pot. I was so fortunate, Robin, to meet so many kinds of people. It was it was just amazing. I still remember what he taught me till today.
What was that? Like anything specific?
Yes. First of all, he had a thick German accent, and he taught pharmaceutical labs, and one of the things that we did was we compounded different types of creams, ointments, and whatnot, and he would always say, "Mr. Paul, make sure that is pharmaceutically elegant."
Funny.
And he said it in such a thick accent, which really what he was trying to say was that you have to go the extra mile to make sure that what you're doing is up to standard. But he was just an amazing man. I really do wish that I spent more time listening to him. But, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20.
Yes. So you had a great experience at school. Then you finished school and you decided to stay. How come?
Met my children's mother and really just saw the possibility of life here. And I think because of my experiences at Temple, I just really didn't want to leave. I wanted the opportunity to build a life here and to see what the possibilities were. So,
wow. Where have you lived other than Philadelphia? Or have you only lived in the Philadelphia and Bucks County region?
No, actually, I had the good fortune of living in Michigan. Out in the Midwest for about a year and a half to 2 years. We were relocated there by my then company, CVS, and we stayed there for a little bit, but everybody ended up missing home.
Right.
And decided to come back east.
Okay, wow. And you live in Yardley now. So what has your experience been living in different places? Have you experienced people responding to you differently in different places? What is it like for you living as a Black man in Yardley? and versus other places that you've lived in the US?
Absolutely, and that's a great question. You know, the funny thing is that is a very, very involved question.
That's why I have you here.
My very best.
I know it's an involved question. We're devoting an entire hour to that question.
Right. And I will do my very best to answer that as simply and as palatably as possible. It is a very unique thing to live as a Black man in America, period. You know, we have several centuries of history, some of it not the most glowing history that, you know, permeates our society. The portrayal and the image of Black men in American society today, I think you'll agree with me, is not often a favorable one. Mm-hmm. When I go about my day-to-day life, there are certain precautions that I take. You've never met me, Robin. I'm 6'1". I'm about 205 pounds. I go to the gym all the time. So I present a certain physical persona that you see before you even hear me talk. Regardless of the fact that I was a pharmacist in the CVS not too far from here. So I know a lot of these folks from a professional standpoint. However, when you do see me dressed as I am now, walking down the street, there's a certain amount of, caution that I have to take. I can't move too fast. I have to sometimes kind of mind my the air I portray, because it can be seen as threatening. I go to great lengths to, when I do speak, I speak in professional tones. I don't use what they call Ebonics. For those that may not know what Ebonics is, it's vernacular, local vernacular. I make sure my disposition is professional at all times. And I have noticed that when I do walk down the street, if I'm walking with my son when he was younger, I was always greeted with smiles. And I was greeted with, in a friendly way. If I walk down the street myself, it's completely different.
Wow. That sounds exhausting also. I mean, to have that level of hypervigilance, of needing to make sure that you're always on, that you're always portraying a certain energy is coming off of you, that you can never kind of let your guard down. That just sounds exhausting.
Yeah. You get used to it. And I've spoken to some other African-Americans, some of my friends. It's pretty much the same. Perfect example, if I'm standing at a light at the corner of Big Oak Road, waiting for the light to turn green, and there's a car waiting for the light to turn green, if it never fails, if they look over and see me, I'll hear the click of the door of the door being locked.
Wow. What does that feel like for you? And when did you first experience it? Because you said that when you first came to America and you were living at Temple,
right,
and you didn't have this experience. So when did this start to happen for you? That you started to see how people were treating you as a Black man that was different than the bubble you were living with at Temple?
Well, it's a really interesting question. And you know, when I knew I was coming on the show, I really started to try and think when the change started to occur, or at least when I started to notice it. Keeping in mind that this may very well have been happening from the moment I came to the States, I just wasn't aware of it. Mm-hmm. However, it really became omnipresent in my mind when I had my children. Mm-hmm. That's when I started to realize that, you know, things aren't what I really thought they were. Mm-hmm. And especially for the sake of my children, I really started to notice it at that point.
And how does it feel to you? Like when you hear that click, click of the car, when someone just looks at you and they don't even know you, what does that feel like for you?
Oh, it's not just that one instance.
Oh, even I'm sure.
Even when I go into the store, when I go into the CVS where I used to work as a pharmacist, making sure people had their medications and everything, if I'm dressed like I am now, I'll never forget this one situation. I actually was at a Target. I'm not gonna name exactly which one. I had actually just walked into an aisle, and there was a lady that had walked away from her cart, and in the cart, she had her handbag, and it was open. She must have been checking something, and she had walked a few feet away. And as I rounded the corner, came into that aisle, she looked up, saw me, backtracked all the way back to her cart, grabbed her handbag, and walked back to where she was standing before. And this, yeah. Don't forget, this is a place where I worked. There was a chance that I actually took care of her as a pharmacist. But yeah. Because I was dressed in my civvies, probably didn't recognize me. Right. So that is not the only instance. Right. But I think going back to your question, I believe your question was, how does that feel?
Yes.
To be honest with you,
yes,
Robin, I don't really mind it. I won't say I don't care anymore. I don't mind it as much as I used to, because it's just the way it is.
Well, it sounds like you've accepted it as a part of living here. And it sounds like getting upset about it all the time is just going to drain your energy. But I can't imagine that it doesn't hurt and it doesn't feel really crappy to have somebody just look at you and assume that you're going to hurt them, or you're going to rob them, or you're going to hijack their car. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, that can't feel good. It just sounds like you're not really connected to that part, because to be connected to that part all the time is would not be sustainable.
No, it wouldn't be. What it does to you, it takes the best parts of who you are, and it washes it in mud.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to wear that, and that's not who I am.
Right.
I would never have been friends with a wonderful person like Jill and her husband Mike and many of my other friends if I harbored such base emotions. That doesn't mean I'm not aware of the existence of it. As a matter of fact, for me, with my children, I've gone through what I call sensitive. This is just lack of a better way to say it, but I've gone through sensitivity training with them. In that, meaning you have to be aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure you know what's going on around you. So my experiences, the bottom line is, those experiences that I've explained to you, that I experienced, I've educated my children. They are all aware of how what they represent, who they are, how they interact with other people. All my children are aware of that. And really, at the end of the day, as long as my kids are okay, I'm good with it. It's part of life, but we do what we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I just want to keep correcting you. I don't know how good you could possibly be with it. It sounds like you've accepted it as a part of life living here, and that you don't want it to be the center of your focus every day, because it brings you to a darker place. It brings you to a scarier place.
It does. It can be very, very scary. And I thank you for correcting me, because I'm not good with it, but it's the way life is.
Unfortunate.
That's a reality that we have to deal with.
Right. And I'm very curious to know a couple things about Trump. I'm curious to know what you felt when Trump was elected. Like, what did that say to you about our country that you didn't already know, or did it not say anything different? So my first question is it's a two-part question. You can answer it however you want. One was, what was your feeling when he got elected? And then the second is, did you notice a shift in terms of what you had to deal with once he was in office versus before? Like Obama, the fabulous Barack Obama. did you notice a difference in the world from Barack Obama to Trump in terms of how you were treated?
Very, very good questions. And I do thank you for asking them, because I really want to set the record straight as far as from my perspective.
Please.
And my perspective is one that has been peppered with international experiences. Mm-hmm. So really important that I have the opportunity to talk to you about this. When President Trump got elected, it was kind of a wake-up call for all of us, not just for me or not just for Black people. I come from a system where it wasn't always free and open elections. We've done a really good job in Nigeria now to make it free and open and honest elections. So when President Trump got elected, I believed in the system that put him in office.
Okay.
That system is what makes America great.
Okay.
The opportunity for you and me to go to the polls and vote for the people that we feel should be our leaders is a unique and wonderful opportunity for us to express ourselves. So I believed in that system. What happened when President Trump got elected was that there was almost a normalization on indifference to other people's plight.
Yes.
Whether you were a minority, whether you came from a place of hardship and you're seeking a better life, there was a normalization of that indifference to those people that were seeking sanctuary, which is something that I was not used to. Mm. I was not used to America being as cold. I was not used to America being as indifferent. And dare I say, Robin, I was not used to America being
so racist.
Not just racist, but there was a wickedness that was starting to emerge. But I was not used to that. The America mm-hmm. that I fell in love with was the opposite of that. Yes. So from that standpoint, it was a dramatic shift. As a Black person in America, I started to feel this weight on my shoulders. There were certain things emerging in social media, in certain conversations, to the point where at work, I won't even engage in political discourse at all. I'll actually walk out of the pharmacy, I'll walk out of wherever it is, as opposed to engaging in those kinds of conversations. So it really,
go back to that for a second. Why? Why did you feel like you couldn't engage in conversations about it?
Because it brought out the darker side of the conversation. Mm-hmm. It did. Mm-hmm. It was no longer about you expressing your opinion, me expressing my opinion, and we sometimes agree to disagree, or we agree on certain points. It was no longer about that. It was more about you're wrong and you can't see the truth. And this is why we're in the conditions that we're in now. Mm-hmm. Totally belligerent way of mm-hmm. looking at things. Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. listen, let me make this clear. If we elect people that have a different perspective than I do. That's okay. Mm-hmm. What? Why we have the electoral, the election, the set up the way it is today in our country.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm not okay with is this total, the absolute right and the absolute wrong. You're wrong for believing in that person. How un-American?
But do you feel like Trump, so I think that you're saying, and I just want to be clear because I'm not exactly sure what you're saying. Are you saying that you agree that Trump brought out a darker side of humanity? Is that fair to say?
What I'm saying is what we started to see, mm-hmm. always there.
Yes.
Let's not kid ourselves.
Right. I agree.
It was always there. Mm-hmm. It was always there and it's still there. I don't think it's entirely on the president. I don't think what we saw was entirely on the president. What I do think happened when he came into power was that it became normal.
Yes.
So I'm not saying that it's entirely on Donald Trump. What I am saying is that he made it okay to express that.
Okay, so that brings me to my next question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about being friends with people who voted for him?
Oh, that doesn't matter to me.
Really?
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I have close friends that voted for him, and my love for them hasn't diminished one iota. What has since happened when he came into power was that for my close friends, I will sit down and I will talk to them about political subject matter. And it's good conversations. It's good conversations. I don't begrudge them for voting for him.
What's the reason for voting for him? What are they hoping for? What were they hoping for with this guy?
Well, one of the things, a couple of my friends are white male, middle-aged men, and they expressed to me on a couple of occasions that they feel like they're the endangered species.
Oh, they're the endangered species.
Uh-huh. Yes. And for example,
that doesn't blow my mind. What blows my mind is you're totally fine with that. You're totally fine with being friends with someone who believes that they are the victim, given what you know about Black men in America and what we have had to go, not Black, I am Jewish. I am Jewish. So I do get the minority. I get to, I have some cred there, but as a Black man, knowing what you know about slavery and about how America was built on the backs of Black men, and then you hear a white man say, we feel like we are becoming the endangered species.
Right.
How do you stay engaged and connected with a person that believes that?
Well, because I see myself as an educator.
Mm.
I would never have become a pharmacist and a good pharmacist. I would never have thought about being an entrepreneur and hopefully a good one if I, again, allowed the good parts of who I am to be dragged to the mud. It goes back, remember that the conversation we had in the very beginning when I told you I can't allow my essence, who I am, to be dragged through what other people think I should be experiencing. So for my friends that feel the way they do, my role is to educate them. My role is to say, hey, listen, I get what you're saying, but you're looking at it from a temporal point of view. Let's go back. Mm. If you look at some of my posts, it's always, and I'm hopeful that the message I try to get across is that you've got to look at the bigger picture. I understand what you're feeling right now, but that's not all of it. That's a small part of it. Let's if you permit me, let's just go back. I could be wrong. Again, I could be wrong, but let's just go back a little bit and let's look at the bigger picture. And a couple of my friends have come around and have really said, you know, I didn't really look at the whole picture. So that's my role. My role is to be able to come alongside my friends, my colleagues, if they allow me to just go on a journey of self-discovery.
This is blowing my mind. Because, and I'm curious whether you would consider yourself an emotional person.
I'm in tune with my emotions. Mm-hmm. I don't allow them to drive the train.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So if I'm feeling angry, mm-hmm. I have a choice to stay on that train, mm-hmm. and let me where it will, or I have a choice to get off the train and say, I'm not going in that direction. So mm-hmm. I know the triggers and I know exactly what I have to do. With my son, he's been raised that way also. It's okay what you're feeling, but again, we choose to get on the train or we choose to get off. Son, if you do something in anger, you made a choice. We're gonna have to deal with it so that you know not to get on that train again.
But again, I'm gonna speak as a Jewish person for a second.
Yeah.
To me, and I am a highly emotional person. So that's why I was asking you that question, because my head would explode being friends with somebody who said that to me if I were you. So I'm trying to think of a comparison, and the only comparison I can come up with is it would be like, you know, I have a friend and they voted for Trump, and I'm making this up. I have no friends that voted for Trump because they are not my friends. So that's why I'm learning from you as to how you've done it. And let's just say, so hypothetically speaking, I have a friend and they voted for Trump, and I'm talking to them about how he's really brought out anti-Semitism, which I agree with you has always been there, but it's certainly coming far more to the surface than ever before. Hate crimes are up like you would not believe. Well, you would believe.
It was like 30 something percent.
Yes. It's very, very, very high. Yeah. Barbara Simmons, who was a guest on my podcast a couple weeks ago, has the exact numbers from the Peace Center because people call into the Peace Center when these things happen. But I'm trying to picture being friends with someone and I try to explain to them the Holocaust and they say, yeah. But, you know, the Germans did have a point. That's what that sounds like to me. Like, it's like, what? The Germans had a point about what? My extinction? You know, like, so when you talk about, you know, a white middle-aged man friend who's talking about his extinction when Black men are being killed at these alarming rates.
Yeah.
And you're calm, and not only calm, you're educating, and not only educating, your friends. That's really, really, really hard for me to understand.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of respect for it. It's just not a skill I have.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to understand where, and I'm getting it a little bit that you might have feelings about it, but you're not letting those feelings drive the train, as you said.
Yeah, I do have a lot of feelings about it because I want my son to always come home.
Yes.
I don't want someone to take my son's life.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I've got to set an example for my son. I've got to set an example for other Black men that may or may not look up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want them to have better opportunities than I do. The only way I know how to do that is to be an educator. It's not that I don't have feelings and strong feelings about it. I cried when Ahmaud Arbery was killed and gunned down. George Floyd, my son was out there at during the demonstrations.
Yes.
But Robin, I have a great responsibility as a Black man living in Yardley, to be able to pave the way for others. It's a responsibility I don't take lightly. The one way I know to do that, there's several ways. The one way I know to do that is to constantly look for opportunities to partner with others that may not have the intellectual skill set to be able to analyze a situation the right way. I'm not saying that I do, but by all the indications from my education and my training, I do have a certain amount of wisdom that I can impart.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a disservice to those that have been killed for me not to hold a forum, whether it be in my home or social media or given the opportunity at work. I have to speak up. I have to let it be known that this is not the right way. This is not, it's not right. I get that. But I have to maintain a certain, stance so that I can impart that wisdom to others.
Yeah.
So it's not easy.
I hear you. No, I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's amazing to me that you have that level of control about your own emotions, that you can kind of, you have a higher calling and a higher mission that you're trying to accomplish. And so you manage your emotions in a way that I'm not able to in this way, which brings me to my next question, which is, do you even believe, and I sort of think I know the answer to this question, but I want to know for sure. Do you believe that there is such a thing as a Trump supporter who is not a racist?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that. My girlfriend and I have a girlfriend who's always telling me that that's true, and I don't believe it, but I'm going to listen to you. So tell me how that's true, because even if they're not racists, they are okay with racism in order to have elected him and continue to support him.
I think you have to dig a little deeper than that.
Okay.
That friend of mine that I mentioned to you that said that he felt like he was endangered species, he had just gone through a job interview.
Yeah.
And he was literally told by the hiring manager that you're not the right persuasion for the job. And needless to say, he found out later that, you know, he was looked at unfavorably from his perspective, because he was an older Caucasian male. He said that if he was a Caucasian female or a black male, he would have been looked at. That's
my Lord gracious! Come on! I mean, white men have had the power forever. So yes, we are allowing space now for women and minorities.
Yes.
And okay. So yeah, I hear you, but go ahead. Let me calm down. Go ahead. Come on. But go ahead.
Is a racist.
You don't believe he's a racist.
He's my friend.
I know. I know.
The true friend, because we've been friends for a long time, and he knows my children. My children are actually multiracial. So he knows my kids. I believe you have to look at the whole person, not just the sum of their votes. You have to dig a little deeper. You have to have a conversation with them.
Wow.
And I realized that he voted for Donald Trump because he felt like he wasn't getting the job opportunities that he was due. But that doesn't mean he's racist. And many other people have different reasons for why they voted for him. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all have noble reasons why they voted for Donald Trump. Some of them have darker reasons why they voted for him. I'm not discounting that, but absolutely not. Not all Donald Trump voters are racist at all.
Okay, I'm going to have to pray on that one. I'll think about that. First of all, by the way, my daughter knows your son. Small crazy world.
Oh, all of this.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm trying to, I'm aware of the time. So I'm trying to think how many questions I have time for. Okay. So just tell me what you're feeling. Go back to your friend for a minute. And, yeah, you know, and because my next question is about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and what you felt when those deaths occurred, which, you know, we know that they're just three of many, many, many that we don't, yeah, hear about. And what was your friend's reaction to it as well? Like, you know, I know your son, you know, we were at all the protests in Trenton and, yeah, and others, yeah, as well. Yeah. And I don't know if you personally were there, but your son was there.
He was there, yes. Okay. I was working, so I couldn't go.
Okay. The Trenton one was amazing.
Yeah, it was crazy. I saw pictures.
Yeah, it was amazing. And we could talk about that forever too. But what was your reaction? And then what's your friend's reaction to these protests when something like this happens? And then what's your reaction to your friend's reaction? Those are my questions.
Okay. So for me, my initial reaction was threefold. Disgust at the fact that we can take a human life. Disappointment in the justifications I heard from all quarters. And a little bit of hope, because I saw the reaction from the whole nation, how everybody came together.
Yes, it was beautiful.
It was beautiful. For me, there was a great, and underlying all of that, there was a great fear, because I looked at my son. You've seen my son. He's just as tall as I am, and he stands out. And the first thing we did was we talked about it, and I reinforced some of the things that he'd been taught all his life. And he's like, Dad, I know. But after that conversation, the next part of the conversation was what can we do about this? We've got to do something. So we talked about the protest. And the great thing, Robin, is all his friends, white, black,
yes,
female, yes, they all together. They bonded together, and they were at the protests together. Yes. And he would send me a picture and say, Dad, I'm doing okay. This is what's going on. So that was one aspect. The part that I couldn't understand from folks on social media and in some conversation was the justification of taking a life, the justification of the circumstances around taking a life. You've taken a life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but you hear conversations about restitution for slavery and all that. Well, guess what? I personally, if you really want to hear my feeling on that, we want the lives back. We don't want any monetary restitution. We give us our children back.
Yes.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
Can you do that? If you can't do that, I don't want to hear any conversation about that. What we need now is to move forward. We don't want any apologies or explanations. Mm-hmm. We want policy put in place so that we don't lose any more of our children.
Right. So when you hear people talk about restitution, the only restitution that you want is for police to be better trained and for the, for all this police brutality to stop.
Well, what I really do want is give us our children back, but yeah, nobody that, okay?
Right.
So short of that, what I would love to see is what I see in some of the communities around here is communication between everyone. There's a few police officers that live in this area. We have great communication. We talk all the time. I've actually walked up to police officers and said, hey, thanks a lot for what you guys are doing. I see you. it starts with a conversation and acknowledging the other person. Short of that, on top of that, we need to have better discourse between communities and the police force that polices them. What that means, I really, that's outside of what I understand. But it all starts with a conversation, Robin, and we need to have the robust, vibrant conversation, because in talking, mm-hmm. we get to know each other.
Yes, yes. And relationships get built.
They get built.
And then you're a person.
You all of a sudden is a person, or mm-hmm. you have things in common, and yeah. you start. So that's where it starts.
Yes, absolutely. What do you feel that the white community could be doing more to be better allies to the Black community?
You know, I saw that question on your outline, and I was like, oh man, that's a big question. But the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. The answer to that question is what brought Jill and I together. After this whole thing I think it was with George Floyd. Jill reached out to me and she said, I don't understand some of this stuff. Do you have a few minutes to talk? And I remember I sat and I talked to her and Mike, her husband. It's a simple thing. Let's not pretend it's not happening. Let's not pretend after this conversation, I'm going to go to the corner of Big Oak and whatever, and I'm going to hear that click sound. Let's not pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
So just have a conversation around that. Let's start talking about that.
Yeah. So honest conversations between the white community and the Black community, and really listening. What'd you say?
I apologize. I don't want to hear any apologies. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any explanations. Because when you start going down that path, give me my kids, give us our children back is what I'm going to hit you with. You can't do that? Okay. Let's just start talking and let's see where we go from here.
Yeah. Do you feel that people are open to those conversations?
That's a great question. I've learned to sense opportunities to do that. I won't have this kind of conversation with everybody because nobody's equipped to understand it, but I'm quick to those that I feel do. The answer to your question is not everyone. Not everyone's ready to hear that. And quite frankly, I won't take away from having a conversation with someone that is ready and waste my time with someone that's not ready. I really don't have the gift of a lot of time.
Wow, right. Going back to your friend for a second.
Yes.
Your friend that voted for Trump who feels he's becoming an extinct. I just can't with that. Did you talk with him about like the George Floyd? Oh, tell me what his reaction was to that.
He reflected a lot of the same emotions. But underneath, I could almost sense like he was embarrassed by it. And I still haven't looked any further into it because we haven't had the chance to get together because things have just been crazy. But I could almost sense an embarrassment. Whether it be embarrassment at the actions of those that represent him, whether it's embarrassment at the actions of those that don't represent him, I'm not sure yet. Whether he feels responsible in some way because of his vote, I'm not sure. The answer to your question.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I haven't really delved any deeper into that because I haven't had the opportunity to do so.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just saying that there's such beauty that caused me to stay in America. I didn't have to stay in America. I didn't have to choose to have children in America, but there's such beauty that I can see the beauty. I can taste it because I can feel it because it's what brought me away from what I knew all my life. And I think because, maybe because there are folks that were born here or you just don't have the trained eye that I do, that beauty cannot be tarnished by flirtation with President Trump. And that really ultimately is what I think his election was. It was a flirtation with something different.
Yeah, but that's Robin, fascinating.
But Robin, if that beauty can be stolen away by what we've witnessed, then it was never really real. Then you owe yourself the responsibility of looking within yourself and saying, what is it about me that made me so easy to get angry? And those are justifiable feelings. But if you take your eye off the big picture, then they've won.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They've pulled you away from who you really are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, if they drag you into the muck with them, go back in history.
Yeah.
Go back to every single instance in history. This can become a much bigger conversation, by the way.
Well, this will be part two.
Yes, it will be part two. But the bottom line is we have to stick to who we are. We cannot let anyone pull us away from that. And in reference to your brother, there's a strength that you have, Robin, that will bring him back into discourse with you.
I don't know about that.
We'll see. I've seen greater miracles.
Well, I'm open to it. Should my brother be listening to my podcast? I am open to having a conversation. I'm open to a relationship. I'm open to understanding where he's coming from. Wonderful. I am open to it. That's all I can be.
Yes, exactly. And that's powerful.
Okay. Well, I would love to continue having conversations with you. I would love to maybe have you on next season as well.
It would be a real pleasure for me to come back. I really enjoyed the conversation with you. You're a gracious, gracious host.
Thank you. You've been a wonderful guest as well.
Thank you, Robin. It's been a real pleasure. And I would love to come back if you would have me.
Absolutely. I've learned a lot and I have a lot to think about based on what you've said. And I want to thank you for being on the pod. I want to thank all of my guests for all of your support all season long. Please follow me on Robins_Nest_pod. Also, I want to remind everybody, I have a book, Go Take a Bath, A Powerful Self-Care Approach to Extraordinary Parenting, available on Amazon. And while we're on break, I hope that you're going to catch up on all of the podcasts that you've missed. We've had 10 excellent episodes, all really offer a different perspective, and I hope that you'll take the time to listen to it. And we have a great lineup of guests next season, and hopefully Olu will come back again at that time. So thank you so much, Olu. Thanks for being on the pod.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Robin. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.